Just because we play what Carl wants.
I don't know.
They can't stop us, y'all.
All right, everyone, welcome to the Interracial Joan Podcast. I am your host, at Lousy Mac.
And I'm at Very White Guy.
And you are very white indeed.
Particularly.
We are here coming at you from the suburbs of Philadelphia for episode 7 of the Interracial Joan Podcast.
You guys.
You can do a ding for that.
Oh, I can?
Just right now, do it.
I wasn't ready to ding. Well, you know, you did say that in the song, they can't stop us. I don't think anyone's trying to.
No, no one's listening, so no one's stopping us either. Yet. We're working on that, though. So you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter under Interracial John. And you can also find us online at interracialjohn.com. We are also on Stitcher Radio, stitcher.com, and you can just search Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. The John, and you can find us on there. You can listen to us on Stitcher or also on our website. So
what she said.
Yeah, what I said. So let's jump into stuff. I know that our loyal listener, Carl, hey, Carl, sent us this awesome link to Gawker.com article entitled Douchebag, the White Racial Slur We've All Been Waiting For.
This thrilled me to no end.
It's so fantastic.
I read this with probably more abandon and excitement.
You were pretty excited about it.
The last article I got this excited about was Coates's case for reparations. Yeah.
So anyways, it's a white middle class male professor at a big public university, and he has, undergraduate students in a class about history of race in America. And he does this exercise where he asks them to shout out white racial slurs during the class. And usually they can't come up with anything. They'll say like redneck or cracker or hillbilly. And everyone's like, yeah, I guess so. But like if you're not poor or backwoods, right, like it doesn't really apply
to you. They're basically class more than whiteness.
Versus, of course, there's so many for other races and you know, genders and all sorts of stuff. He says in the article, he has this run where he does, and he says that, you know, to get people to understand where privilege resides in their own life, he basically goes through a whole list of stuff. But in the end, he always says just, you know, don't be a douchebag. That's his basic, like, you know, summit on, you know, summary of how not to show your privilege is don't be a douchebag. So he asks the students, what about douchebag? And then kind of follows that up with, have any of you called someone black or brown or Asian a douchebag? Have you called anybody poor a douchebag? And they're all like, not really? And he comes to this conclusion that, yes, it turns out only rich, white, heterosexual men are douchebags, which is hilarious. So he said,
I'm going to second that.
Okay, you're going to agree.
Yeah, very white guy completely agrees. And I would even say, I think like the last whatever, you know, couple of months, there's been a shift in different sort of language people use. And there's this weird like social justice warrior is supposed to be some sort of negative connotation. And now people are using like, oh, you know, you're just guilty, a guilty white. And none of that really bothers me.
Right.
But I think douchebag would.
Yeah, I think douchebag does. And I do think douchebag touches on something. He says specifically, he talks about why do we call someone a douchebag, someone who is heterosexual, rich, white, and male? He says,
I should be clear. This is specifically douchebag. He's saying is espousing this view, hypothesis, that it's solely and specifically for rich, white males.
Yeah, and this is why he says. Because the douchebag is someone, overwhelmingly white, rich, heterosexual males, who insists upon, nay, demands his white male privilege in every possible set and setting. The douchebag is equally douchey. That's the adjectival version of the term, in public and in private. He is a douchebag waiting in line for coffee as well as in the bedroom.
I said that I'd be offended by douchebag. I'm a rich white male, I guess.
Yeah. Well, you know, I would say that you certainly could be in that quadrant.
Well, I guess when I say
if something was going to offend me,
that is why.
Right.
Yeah, that would offend me because, you know, the things that offend usually kind of touch close to home.
Well, I've been really thinking about it, like when I call somebody a douchebag, when you see it, because it's been something that it's funny, just maybe 4 or 5 years ago, you never heard anybody say it. And then you started seeing it pop up on like sitcoms, TV shows, things like that. So it's become a much more widely used derogatory term. And I've never used it for anybody except for a rich, white, heterosexual male myself. I've never called a woman a douchebag.
Nor would you.
It's always a dude that's rich, white, and male. So it's kind of interesting. So he finishes up with, for the time being, this is the vernacular critique of whiteness that we've always needed. And it's been right before our eyes all along. The term douchebag, again used as we already use it, has the power to name white ruling class power and white sexist privilege as noxious, selfish, toxic, foolish, and above all, dangerous. Since the coming of colorblindness as the official ideology of neoliberal racism, we have needed a precise term with which to recognize and ridicule white privilege when we see it. So here it is. Use it and give the douchebags the thing they've always imagined anyways. Reverse discrimination.
I'm gonna give a ding for douchebag. It's the white racial slur we've all been waiting
great.
For. And even as I think about it, my hurt being called a douchebag is because I've let my privilege show. I can't escape it. I have privilege. You know, I'm white, male, and had every advantage afforded to being a white male in this country. And that, you know, you forget about it, and you're like, I'm acting douchey, and it, you know. It's awesome. I love it.
Yeah.
And I'm like you. I use it, I wouldn't say a lot, but like, oh, look at that fucking douchebag. Look at this douche. What a douchey move.
Yeah. Awesome. So shout out to Carl for bringing to our attention, and also the writer and the professor who came up with this douchebag theory, if you will, Michael Mark Cohen. And that you can find it on Gawker.com. Just search Gawker.com and douchebag, I'm sure.
Thank you, Michael Mark Cohen.
Yeah. So speaking of white privilege, you told a story on the last episode, episode 6, from your trip to the Tower Theater Saturday night.
Sure.
And, you know, you felt that you could jump up and start recording this guy. So funnily enough, you record stuff, you know, frequently. You're a terrible photographer with your camera.
It's a little bit of a running joke that I'm also terrible at videoing.
Because despite me telling you multiple times now that you have to record in landscape mode, you continue to record in the wrong direction. So I'm sitting at my desk yesterday and an email comes in from Vimeo. I'm on just like their, you know, Vimeo web content creator mailing list, and it says mastering mobile video, and it has an infographic basically saying what I've been telling you for I don't know how long since you've got your phone to make sure they're doing it. It says use that fancy flat device in your pocket to create videos you're proud of. We'll teach you how to work with light and capture sound and to follow the most important rule of all, holding your phone the right way.
And they had like a little like infographic with like the guy holding the phone the wrong way.
I forwarded it to you. I was like, just bookmark this. And
tail this onto the douche? Was this douchey of me?
It wasn't douchey of you, but it was a white privilege thing. Like you making the video. You making the video last Saturday. So I was just thinking like, oh yeah, you recorded this video. And well, so you recorded even that video the wrong direction.
I stand by my actions and I agree that it's very privileged, but I think that's the one and most important place for people to use their privilege.
Sure, I even said that. I think people should exercise their privilege in those ways. When you have the privilege, that's where you want to definitely do that for sure.
Right.
Yeah, so just all you people out there making videos, landscape mode.
Don't be a very white guy.
Do not be a very white guy and take completely useless videos.
Did you see that dude on Twitter tagged me VWG?
I did see.
I kind of like that.
You like VWG?
I do. Mm. Very white guy.
Sounds like you need like a cape.
VWG. I'm thinking more like a stamp. Like VWG. Boom. Like boom. Stamped.
VWG. So the other thing that I wanted to talk about a little bit was there's a new video out from that company or that group, Fuck Hate, FCKH8. And this one goes after feminism, or it speaks to feminism. So I'm going to just play it. Are you going to play it?
You know what? I didn't. I got to cue that up real quick.
Okay, you got it. It's pretty. Yeah.
It was on Mashable and a bunch of places.
Yeah.
Let me just hit play here.
I heard it was taken off of YouTube, so if they're playing the YouTube version, you're not going to see it there.
It's on Vimeo.
Okay, perfect.
What the fuck? I'm not some pretty fucking hopeless provincial. princess in distress.
I'm pretty fucking powerful.
And ready for success.
So what is more offensive?
A little girl saying fuck or the fucking unequal and sexist way?
Society treats girls and women.
It's our future.
So listen up, grown-ups.
Here's some words more fucked up
than the word fuck.
Hey, inequality. Women are paid 23% less than men
for the exact same fucking work.
And women who graduate university with straight A's get paid as much as men who only got C's.
So bad grades
equal more bank
just because you're a boy?
Hello and hell no.
Pay up, motherfucker.
I shouldn't need a penis to get paid. Rape and violent. Fucked up facts.
One out of every five women
will be sexually assaulted
or raped by a man.
One, two,
three, four, five. Which one of us will it be?
So how many more women have to get knocked down before society stands up and stops it?
Here's a hot tip. Stop telling girls how to dress
and start teaching boys
not to fucking rape.
We're glad a women's right to vote is fair.
But equality's next step
is walking to the car
without fear.
Be pretty.
So here's the tricky thing.
Pretty, it's a compliment.
But here's how this focus works to girls' detriment.
Society teaching girls that our bodies,
boobs, and butts
are more important than our brains
leads us to thinking
our worth comes from our waistline.
My aspirations in life should not be worrying about the shape of my ass. So fuck focusing on how I look.
And give me a book.
The continued sexism, girls and women's stale face.
Instead of cleaning these girls' mouths out with soap, maybe society should clean up its act. This is what a feminist looks like. Girls just want to have fun. Demental rights.
$5 from each shirt goes to kick-ass charities that are fighting every day to make the world more equal for women and girls.
Yo, bro, when you tell a boy it's bad to act like a girl, it's because you think it's bad to be a girl.
Fuck that sexist shit. Fuckhate.com.
I'll stop it there. I love it. I love it.
I loved the video. I thought it was great, really funny, snappy. Their shirts are cool, whatever. I know that there's been a lot of backlash against fuck hate because people think like they're profiteering off of social justice issues.
In particular, and all the Ferguson one, right?
With the kids. The Hey White People video.
Right.
Which I think is just ridiculous. I actually had a conversation on Facebook today about it with some people. And I just, my point was really just that there are actual people fighting against us on both of these fronts, both racism and feminism. Why is there a need to give voice against these people that, okay, they're profiting. So what? I don't think that there needs to be an altruistic bent to anything someone does. And I also don't think that having capitalism in the mix negates anybody's efforts.
Let's say that they're making money allows them to keep the doors open and make more fucking videos, which, by the way, they give away for free.
Right. Even if it doesn't have anything to do with keeping open the doors, even if it's just for profit, they want to do it. There's things you can do with your company that don't do anything good for anyone and continue to make money. McDonald's, Walmart, et cetera, right. Et cetera. Or you can have a company that, yeah, it turns a profit and it makes the people that work their money and own it money, but it also is doing some good. It just disturbs me to see, you know, people have to come out and speak out against these people.
Well,
I'm gonna call out specifically Color Lines, which bills itself as some bullshit media wing of Race Forward, which is a non-for-profit company. And the more shit I see from them, the more I think there are pieces of shit that work at that place.
Well, and you know, not for profit too, like Susan B. Komen. You can be a not for profit and have people on
the
board making millions of dollars.
The NFL is a fucking not for profit.
The NFL is a not for fucking profit.
So let's keep it real. These people are for profit company, which forces them to have a level of transparency that nobody holds not for profits to. Nobody does. So I just think it's kind of ridiculous. I have efforts that I can put towards lots of things, and I'm unfortunately forced to come and support, or I wouldn't say support because I actually haven't bought anything from them, but to come to their defense, I take offense at needing to tear people down for no reason. And I'm going to just talk a little bit about color lines. The headline they had after the Hey White People video came out was, quote, "This is the T-shirt company making money off Ferguson." Now, if that's not the most clickbait bullshit ass
right.
thing that you could ever say. And then they had the nerve to write this entire critique and never even contact the company. They claimed there was no way to know who the money was going to.
It's on
and
their
a
website.
Bunch of other stuff that just wasn't even true.
Right.
And then had the nerve to issue some sort of statement about it.
Well, the Fuck Hate group was like, well, you, Color Lines, are one of our recipients of the funds of this. And they turned it away.
They didn't want it. So yeah. then I have to ask myself, where are we in this fight? Are we trying to move things forward, period? Or are we trying to move things forward the right way?
Yeah.
I don't understand it. And then
it's not good, division.
It's terrible.
And like you said, there are absolutely avowed, horrible, racist, awful fucking murderous people out to stop us. Why do we need people from within the movement? You know, like, I understand that there's a difference of opinion. Like,
fine.
Some people
don't
think
support
that,
them.
Yeah,
don't share their video.
You don't have to tear
don't buy
them
their
down.
Stuff. Don't mention them. In fact, you talking about them is bringing more attention
I think
to the thing
the
you're trying to say
no,
is
I think,
bad.
I think the purpose for Color Lines was
for Color Lines
for
is, but not for the everyday person. Because I've had this same argument with regular people. And I'm like, you have a platform, whoever is listening to you, to say anything you want, to come out and be against or for anything you want to. Why choose this?
Well, I would say that, too, my takeaway whenever we talked about this before, like, what is needed, Michelle Alexander and New Jim Crow called a revolution, yeah. right? This is a revolution that's needed to change mass incarceration, police brutality. It's not going to happen just like, you know, a couple of people, right? And it's not going to happen quickly, but the utter force, the sheer will that it's going to take is going to absolutely require a multitude of people working in a multitude of varied directions that not everyone's going to agree with. They're not going to be all at the same pace, the same speed. You know, you had Malcolm X and Martin Luther King. They were, you know, in division in some way for this very reason.
Yes.
Because, you know, and then what was the movie we saw about the HIV virus and in New York? And there was the guy that had the group. It was the same sort
right.
of thing.
Yeah, it was the play that they turned into the HBO
movie. Yeah, but he split off from the movement and formed ACT UP. And was that the HIV group ACT UP?
Yeah.
And
the Normal Heart is the name of that.
Yeah. But he wanted to be a much more almost
radical,
I was like a radical and
yes.
aggressive approach.
He wanted it
and
to
look,
be
look
like
what fucking
the
in the end I wouldn't say worked, but I think he was right.
Yeah,
you
but
know?
I think but also
more.
I could see why the other people felt the other
absolutely.
Way. Absolutely. You
know, I can
doesn't
see
mean
both
either
sides. Was wrong.
It doesn't
mean either was wrong.
Both things were needed in that
they
moment.
They were both needed.
Some people were talking about the now, the people that were sick currently, and he was looking to the future.
Absolutely.
So I just think it's crazy. And then today go ahead.
I have an image in my head of the world with like hundreds and hundreds of ropes all pulling the world in a different direction, but they're all sort of like tangential to each other. They're not pulling straight. They're not pulling in unison, but that's what's going to happen. And you just, if someone's moving in the right direction, if you can see, and it doesn't matter about motive, it doesn't matter if they're making fucking money, you know, you don't have to buy it. If they're making money, fine, don't buy it. But if it's a force for good and it's moving in the right direction, just like leave it alone. Like don't
right.
tear it down. You
right.
can not lift it up. You know, fine. You can talk even, you know, in some ways about, you know, the troublesome, problematic portions of it. But it's so obvious when you're doing it for your own gain and clickbait and you're just tearing somebody down so that you can have, I don't know, credit or something?
Yeah, and then just to bolster my irritation at bullshit-ass color lines, today the awesome movie Dear White People comes out nationwide.
Oh, I'm so excited. I've been this excited.
I know.
We're going
we
to see
already have our tickets. We're going to see the first showing in Philly.
Geeking out.
Cannot wait to see it. So excited. But it came out nationwide today, and of course, Color Lines posts everywhere, Twitter, Facebook, front page on their website, a post. Does Dear White People miss the mark on casual racism? Are you fucking kidding me?
Again, so riding on the fucking
it's
coattails
so
of clickbait.
Clickbait, disgusting. I just find it gross.
And you know what pisses me off is like name a fucking movie ever in the history to come out on, and this is an independent movie, so
yes.
let's be honest, right? It's not a big.
It was crowdfunded and it's inception.
But name anything anyone's ever done on any scale to literally in a hopefully entertaining and humorous way increase the dialogue about racism. Period. Just literally racism. Period. And I guarantee I've seen the preview. They're going to hit microaggressions. They're going to hit a lot of points, and they fucking missed the mark on casual racism? Get the fuck out of here.
It just reminds me of these black-on-black crime people.
It's a distraction.
What? It's such clickbait, and it's disgusting. And, you know, I want to ask them. They have this big conference that they're having in Dallas next year, Race Forward, which is
a conference, like an in-person deal?
Oh, yeah, you have to pay. It's so freaking expensive.
Who's making the money fucking there?
Thank you.
How much money is that going to fucking
Where's
end
that
racism?
Money going? Exactly.
You know what? And let's be serious. That fuck hate video for hey white people has been seen by like 500,000 people.
Literally.
How many people are going to go to that conference? A couple thousand?
Thank
Get the
you.
Fuck out of here. Right?
So ridiculous.
And that video, people, I know you had this discussion. I love her and she raised me. My mom is a wonderful, amazing. She's about as liberal and progressive. She is she missed her calling not working for, I don't know. Like
the ACLU.
Yeah, seriously, the ACLU on the nose.
Sure.
She missed her calling, not organized. I love her to death. But she was, you're her daughter. She has a black daughter-in-law. She was like a lot of, like me, prior to, and I'm not calling my mom, I'm the same way. I was a white person on this continuum of evolution of understanding that went, there's like on the one polar end is like avowed racist, and then you move forward. And the last step, I think, is actively combating racism, right?
Right.
I'm actively anti-racist, and I tend to be maybe militantly or aggressively anti-racist.
Certainly for a very white guy, you are.
Thank you. So, but actively fighting racism is that last sort of piece. And right before that is you have an understanding, you have a compassion, maybe not a complete understanding, but you have an understanding of what's going on and why it's going on, and you have compassion, but you're really not doing anything about it. You're maybe, I don't want to say apathetic is a little bit hard, but that's what I would say about myself. I was asleep at the wheel. I was apathetic in regards to...
And I think
to,
there's a level of, like, you think you can't do anything.
I would say that all the time.
Right.
Right? Like, oh, what can I do? What can one guy
right,
do?
Right, even when I started working on the legislative
Absolutely.
Stuff, you were like, oh, my God. It's such a waste of time.
I didn't see it. And you guys have already banned the box, and now we're going to get bail reform November 4th. But anyway, so my mom, I won't say how old she is, but she's my mother, and I'm old. She saw the fuck hate video, the hey white people video, and the dialogue and discussion that it started with her and me... profound. She literally says to me, I've been looking for a cause. I didn't realize it, but I've been looking for something to do with some of my time. Because she's, semi-retired. She works for herself. She has her own business. And she's now literally, she went from there to, she had sort of the same reaction I did, the sort of white guilt. And the white guilt is like, fuck, I can't believe I've been this negligent and this is going on. And the pendulum swings usually pretty powerful in the other direction. And she did the same thing, but she asked what she can do. So I gave her Ta-Nehisi Coates' article, Case Reparations, and said, it's long, but I really think you should read it. And she's literally sharing it one by one with her friends in her circle and having discussions and dialogue with them. That's a rope that's being pulled. It's not the biggest lever, but it's in the right direction.
Absolutely.
And it's amazing. And that she's one of those 500,000 people that
just
have seen
saw
that
video. Yeah.
What if that has an effect?
And she didn't buy a t-shirt.
She didn't buy a t-shirt, So I just, when people tear that specific, and the other thing that, and I'll say this, I acknowledge and respect that the video can in some ways for people of color, for black people, come off in a kind of negative way. It has there's a perception to it. But I just would say, in my opinion, the video's intended audience is white people. So I think you need to look at the content, what's its purpose, what's its audience. And I'm not saying the ends justifies the means. A dialogue about, okay, this is problematic for this, this, and this reason. Great, but let's not tear it down. Let's not say, they're profiting off of, children in Ferguson. That's kind of fucking crazy.
It is. It's just clickbait, disgusting, self-serving bullshit. True story.
Let's move on to better blackness.
Yeah, instead of fuck hate, fuck color lines. That's what I have to say about that.
Okay. I'm with
I'm
you.
I'm really anti them, and I've been like railing.
I can see that.
I was like just under the surface, but today with that Dear White People headline, it just sent me over the freaking edge. I can't with it.
The fucking day the movie comes out in wide release, it's so obvious. It's on the nose.
It's gross.
It's so obvious.
Well, let's talk about something more fun.
Yeah, so we dubbed this lame duck blackness.
Yeah, we've been talking about how ever since the second term started that the first couple has been super duper okay with their blackness, which I absolutely love.
Fucking love it.
And I realized it started even with that when the president did the Between Two Ferns with Zach Galifianakis
sure.
about Obamacare. It was like he was uber like, yeah, a total black dude. So of course, recently our beautiful FLOTUS, First Lady
FLOTUS
Michelle Obama,
with the MOTUS.
She is a FLOTUS with the MOTUS, put out a Vine that's been seen by, how many people has it been seen?
28 million and counting. And I'll just say a couple of things. When it came out, I got to it when it was still like rated a million, like 900,000, 800,000. I've never seen a Vine, and I know no one's really using Vine anymore. This very white guy does, but nobody does. But the Vine counter was jumping by like tens of thousands at a clip. It hit a couple million right away, and it's now at 28 million. And I'll play it because I love it. I missed the intro.
Turn up for what?
So she's got a turn up from the White House garden.
Turn
and she's
up
obviously playing.
What?
Turn up for what?
Actually, this song is Turn Down for What?
Turn Down for
What? Turn Down for What? But it's a turn up because they just did the harvesting at the big White House garden that she put in. So it's kind of cool. She's hilarious. And she's like nodding her head, bouncing to it too.
It's awesome.
It's so funny.
And not only did this get 28 million views, but the entire channel has now had like this. The intern or whoever put this piece of content together should have got a raise because I think they've doubled from like 20 or 30 million to 60 million total views on all their other content. Shit about the, you know, initiative for food and schools, all kinds of stuff.
Right. I think people also forget that they have two young children, not young, but younger, you know, teenagers and preteen, where I feel like people forget that that keeps you very up to date with like current events.
Sure.
Like in pop culture and stuff.
Well, even if you look at the description, she tagged Alpha Cat, who's a Viner, a guy that makes a living at making Vines. And he does a wicked Obama impersonation. You know, a lot of like, you know, White House Obama Vines. He did the nay nay in the White House.
Oh, right.
So she tags Alpha Cat, like who has a million plus followers. I don't say she, the White House intern that uploaded
that's
this.
Right.
Tagged Alpha Cat. But that's
I don't think it's an intern. I think it's probably like a paid individual.
Oh, you're right. I shouldn't. At the White House,
I doubt it's an intern.
Someone making some bank.
I think the interns just get
coffee. They fucking hit a home run. They knew what they were doing
with
Vine.
Yeah, it's hilarious. So then this week brought us to early voting is opened. Yeah. And so our fantastic president went to vote and had an interaction with a black couple at the polls. So,
and then, it pains me to play CNN. Fuck you, CNN.
Who we're about to hear
goddamn Josie story.
Way, don't touch my girlfriend. But he quickly learned, you know, it's tough to one-up a politician. Roll it.
The audio's tough. The guy says, don't touch my girlfriend.
I really
wasn't. I am sorry.
I know. There's an example of a brother. Just embarrassing you for no reason.
Embarrassing.
He said the brother embarrassing him.
What's up?
He was going to say something smart, but I don't know what he's going to say.
He's the best part.
You'll be going back home talking to your friends about it. What's his name?
Mike Jones.
I can't believe Mike. He is such a fool.
That's Mike the fool.
He really is.
He's quoting his friends.
Mortified. She's having a conversation with the president. Fortunately, the president was nice about it.
I'm freaking out right now.
And, so it's all right.
And then he doesn't just hug. He gets a kiss.
He said, give me a kiss. Easy. Give me something to talk about. Now you
swagger, dude. That was swagger. I fucking love it, dude. I fucking love it.
Off the cuff.
Don't touch my girlfriend.
He walks with it. Oh, I wasn't planning on it. Like, you know I'm the president, right? Why would I touch your girlfriend?
Well, little of his, like,
her hair wasn't even done.
He's tearing the guy up. He's like, you can go home and have some. What's his name?
Mike Jones.
Yeah. Mike's such a fool.
His name really is Mike Jones.
It's really Mike Jones?
Yes. That's why I keep saying that. No, his name is actually Mike Jones.
Does he have fronts?
I don't know if he has friends, but I really wish that when the president asked her, like, what's his name, she should have said, Mike Jones. It would have been awesome.
If he had gone into a rap for Mike Jones, that would have been awesome.
Well, they've been making the circuit. I've been seeing them on all sorts of TV shows and stuff, doing interviews.
The Mike Jones and her?
And his girlfriend, yeah. I don't know what her name is.
So his little Don't Touch My Girlfriend's now getting their 15 minutes.
Oh, yeah, they got their 15 minutes in. She's telling them, how excited she was. She couldn't believe he kissed her. It's cute. It's very cute.
It is pretty
cute. But anyways, it was very, like, that's totally the black dude's response to that. Like, dude, I wasn't touching your girlfriend.
Well, he did have swagger when he walked off. Like, for real.
He always has swagger when he walks, and it's funny because I feel like, you remember when you used to always tell like inappropriate jokes to your one white boss, Jay?
Yeah.
And he'd be like totally uncomfortable but and like not know what
viewers
to say.
So this is when I was in Chicago working in the Wrigley building for like an even whiter dude than me. And we're in commercial real estate, so it's like super like upper crusty, like white guy, you know, like really white, like golf course, like back yeah. office, like handshake deal,
boys
like
old boy club, network. Yeah.
So I used to love to kind of like fuck with him because he knew Leslie was black, so obviously he met her. And the best moment, I'm at his house, we're carpooling, and he's like, "Hey, you want to get a coffee for the road?" I said, "Sure." He goes, "How do you take it?" And I told him,
"Like my women, black and bitter."
And his face
was like,
he just did not know where to. He's like, "Is that should I laugh? Is that a joke? I'm not sure. Is right. that inappropriate? I want to laugh."
So I feel like that's how a white president would have responded to someone being like, "Hey, man, don't touch my girlfriend." Like Bush would have been like, like not know what to say. Sure. But because he's black and he's able to now show his blackness.
Do you think it was because the dude saying it was black, like if a white person said, "Don't touch my girlfriend."
Well, he certainly wouldn't have been able to say.
He would have joked.
But here's just an example of a brother just trying to come at somebody for no reason.
I love Obese. That was fantastic.
Awesome. All right. So that's really
Don't
funny.
Don't touch my girlfriend.
Don't touch my girlfriend.
God damn it. So another our Legion of One listener, Carl, sent this to me, but I'd already seen it. It went through the rounds on Twitter. But there was the Washington Post WAPO article, basically poor kids who do right do worse than rich kids that do wrong.
Right.
And they said specifically rich high school dropouts remain in the top 20% income, about as much as poor college grads stay stuck in the bottom. Mm. So really, like the article is about what's going on. But in short, it's glass ceilings, glass floors, rich kids who can go work for the family business. And in Canada, 70% of the ones in the top 1%, 70% of the top 1% do just that or inherit the family estate, don't need a high school diploma to get ahead. It's an extreme example of what economists call opportunity hoarding. Mm. And we've talked about, I even just mentioned Ta-Nehisi Coates, but wealth and accumulation of wealth primarily through home, you know, the very, very rich 1%, they've done it through a larger scale instead of a home. They passed down through generation to generation corporations and businesses that, you know, maybe in large part were formed on the backs of slaves. And it's still to this day, right? There's that connection is very real.
Sure.
And I don't know. I just thought it was interesting that here's the WAPO article saying that, you know, you're right. You can do everything. And I think that really, for me, the takeaway is this fucking narrative of, you know, lift yourselves up by the bootstraps.
Yeah,
you know,
it's ridiculous.
Make better choices and try harder.
It's personal responsibility.
Yeah. Like all them fucking people in Africa, if they just worked harder, you know, wouldn't make more than $1 a day.
No, because I just feel like I believe in personal responsibility, what you're saying is then that black people that are poor, that don't have jobs, that are in jail, that they've decided that's what they wanted to do. And it's just such bullshit rhetoric. And
it's the final. So there'll be people that have racist views, and then there are people that, when I've talked to them online and Twitter, and they're even, you know, pretty cogent and rational, they'll come down to, and we've talked about this before, I said, listen, there's only, you know, the statistics on mass incarceration and criminalization and extrajudicial killings and police profiling and brutality, those are there. We all agree on those statistics. They're factual. So now what is the hype, you know, the conclusion? Either the system's rigged and it's inherently unjust and unfair to people of color, or people of color are inherently criminal and violent and prone to criminality. And they'll literally come like, you're right. I believe that. And there's a Pew Research that says 40%, right? Chonilla talked about this. Yep. 40%. Fucking A, man. 40% of white people think that black folk are just, you know, more violent and criminal.
Well, it's funny, too, because, you know, we always have that quote about luck and being a collusion of opportunity meeting preparation.
Is that a quote someone made? That's not us, though.
I think it's just people say it.
Right,
I don't know.
Like a Chinese proverb kind of thing?
I don't know if it's a Chinese proverb. But anyways, which is two things that people of color are denied currently and continue to be denied. You know, opportunity certainly is not there when you are starting with a poor income.
It's the glass floor.
It's terrible. And then the preparation portion, you know, we talk about schools a lot and funding for schools. Where does funding from schools come? Directly from property taxes. You have people that don't own homes due to
racism. Go more meta. A WAPO article literally, and I know you know these statistics, Leslie, that the wealthier families, the parents literally spend like 5, 6, 7, 8 more hours per week with the child.
Yep.
You know, their vocab is more.
Because they can.
Because they can. Because they're not working. Because
absolutely.
They can.
Because
they're not
because
traveling
they
to work.
It's totally true. And it made me think about, you know, we were recently in Michigan and in East Grand Rapids, which is a small, very wealthy enclave just outside of Grand Rapids. It used to be part of Grand Rapids proper, and rich people just kind of cleaved it off. They have their own high school and their own municipality and their own, you know, all of that kind of stuff. that in Michigan they passed a law that basically all the money that comes from property tax that goes to school is distributed evenly throughout the state.
They were trying to prevent municipalities from doing just what East Grand Rapids did.
Correct. And so now they, in East Grand Rapids, they formed this charity.
Like a 501c.
It's a 501c company that everybody is expected, not expected, they do. They donate to, and if you don't, you're kind of pressured into doing
it. A little ashamed, yeah.
Because if your kid's going to go to East Grand Rapids, they have to have a way to
get more money
to, more money to them.
Directly to that school.
To spend more per student than the other students within the state and within the city.
And that's their prerogative. I don't hold it against them.
It's not that I'm holding it against them. I'm just talking about the fact that even when the state makes inroads to not have that be the case, the rich people still find a way to make it the case. That's what my point is in terms of the preparation
part. Part of the problems in Ferguson and St. Louis County is just what you've described, that there are a myriad of municipalities and courts because little divisions and towns have cleaved themselves off to basically get away from black people.
Absolutely. White flight.
Yeah.
And it made me think. We watched a short video the other day just about, you know, racism and the history of racism in this country and kind of how, you know, the history that we're taught and how incorrect it really is.
The number of signers
of the Declaration of Independence, three-quarters that owned slaves. George Washington, the father of our
state, 215
slaves he owned. You know, this is the bastion of liberty.
But you say all the time, our founding fathers were pedophiles, racists, and slave owners.
And rapists. That's a fact.
It's a fact. I
say it all the goddamn time because it's always the goddamn fact. And it made and the person made something I hadn't even ever thought of about the fact that during slavery, any time a slave could have discovered or created an invention, it was automatically the property of the owner. So we don't even have any idea about how many of these amazing inventions that white people quote unquote created that weren't created by them at all, but by people that they owned. And it really got me to thinking about how little and there's no way to even go back and know about these things because they've done such a fucking good job of erasing our history.
Right.
We watch these genealogy shows and it's like, oh, black people, once we get to slavery, it's like, we're listed as cattle nothing.
Why are we supposed to believe, and we do, that Eli Whitney invented the cotton gin?
Why are we supposed to believe that?
Was he running the cotton gin?
Why did he get all...
Was he involved in
We're supposed to believe that
all?
No black people throughout the history of slavery ever had any ideas or inventions ever? Because that makes sense.
And I say I don't want to say it's logical, but if you work for a company and that company pays you and you patent something on behalf of the company, it's owned by the company.
But they put your name on it.
They do.
They put your name on it, Drew.
Depending on the agreement you have with your employer, they could own it in 100% totality.
They can own it. They don't have to give you something, but they do. When you sign those agreements, they do have to put the name that you were the one that came up with the patent.
Sure,
even if you don't get monetary, you still do get credit that this came from your brain.
Good point.
And that's what I'm talking about. You know,
monetization's nice.
It's nice
being in the history books.
But being able to be in the history books and show black youth and white youth and the youth of our country that, yes, you know, there are things that came from black culture besides what they think of it as today.
Go even one more meta. Who's to say Americans have invented shit other than the patent office, right?
Yeah, we
invented
exactly.
We invented a way to say that we own everything. Yeah. Whoopee. Pretty smart.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. This next one, I haven't talked to you, shared with you, or done anything because...
Yeah, you like mentioned it, I don't know what that is.
I want your unabated, just straight up, I want to get the fire. So a think tank, I guess I'm putting air quotes around think...
Please do.
...called the American Enterprise Institute.
Oh, wait, I've heard of these douchebags before.
Oh, they're super retarded conservative. But it's always these websites like American Enterprise Institute.
Like, what does that even mean?
It says freedom, opportunity, enterprise.
Uh-huh.
And like whenever these right-wing nut jobs come at me with some fucking like facts, it's like liberty, truth, America, justice, org, you know, like ridiculous URLs. And I feel like American Enterprise Institute's no better. So
I just want to say their mission is to defend the principles and improve the institutions of American freedom and democratic capitalism, limited government, private enterprise, individual liberty and responsibility, vigilant and effective defense and foreign policies, political accountability, and open debate.
What a steaming pile of shit. And that's literally the narrative we just talked about of, you know, personal responsibility. They're defending that personal
responsibility. And also, they're not-for-profit, just FYI.
Oh, lovely. So this lovely piece of shit they put out called the Factual... Again, liberty, truth, facts. Factual. You put the word factual in it, it must be true. Like the word healthy on any fucking ingredient.
Newt Gingrich is one of their main people, by the way.
Stop. Just don't go down that rabbit
hole. I'm just letting you know. I'm just letting you know.
So this is the factual feminist. And I'm just going to let it play. And I might pause it because, honestly, the podcast audience, I don't want to make you listen to this or go watch it. The woman's face as she's delivering some of these lines, it's too much. But here we go.
Ladies. Have you been told not to drink the punch at parties? Have you asked a friend to watch your drink because you're afraid to leave it alone, even for a moment?
Wait, pause it for a second. She sounds like one of those SNL chicks.
She does have the vocal fry, right?
I'm going to be wearing Versace now, ladies.
Can you hear the inflection she's giving?
Ladies.
Your drink.
Your drink.
She tilts her head and raises her eyebrows and
your
does like
drink.
A like.
I can see it now. She like probably looks rolling. Like Kim Kardashian. Your drink. All right, go ahead.
Women are often taught to take these precautions because there are supposedly predators who are waiting to slip a colorless, odorless, incapacitating substance into our drinks. Well, how common is drug-facilitated sexual assault? Should women really live in constant fear of roofies?
And again,
constant fear of roofies?
It just, like, is she really, like, not all rapists? Is that where this is going?
Why are you making me listen to this?
It breaks my heart that they got a woman to do this.
You mean got a
money,
woman?
Money.
There's stupid women out there, too. Don't get it twisted.
That's coming up next on The Factual Feminist.
I'm just sighing already.
This music is irritating.
Hi, I'm Caroline Kitchens, in for Christina Hoff Summers, who will be returning.
Swipe fade for no reason.
Now, last month, a story about a predatory fraternity at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee made headlines. After a Tau Kappa Epsilon party, three women became severely intoxicated and were taken to the hospital.
They're showing people drinking
during
the hospital.
Now, it turned out that all three of these women had been marked with a red X on their hands when they arrived at the party. Well, that's all it took for accusations of a color-coded date rape drug conspiracy to...
And, like, they zoom in on a bottle of Rouhypnol, literally, right now. This is too much.
Oh, my God.
Finally, Ash Scow at the Washington Examiner looked at the facts. Found that there was no evidence that the exes had anything to do with labeling women for the date rape drug. At least one woman marked with a red X, who was mentioned in a Journal Sentinel article... had multiple drinks that evening, and she didn't end up hospitalized.
She's using the fucking one of my friends, like the random, at least one of the women who had a red X wasn't date raped. It must not be true. Like, really?
Oh, my God.
Fucking really? You're using the, literally, the one random example, right? Like, you see it all the time. Like, there isn't racism. We've got a black president and a black attorney general. There can't be racism. Okay. This one time, this one bad thing happened to a white person. It's reverse racism. The fuck?
As for the drugs, police did find marijuana and Adderall when they searched the fraternity house.
Marijuana?
But no evidence of date rape drugs.
And she just put that in quotes, fucking A.
Oh, my God.
And, like, she when she said marijuana and rolled her eyes, like, I missed the newsflash that marijuana made people rape, right? Like, I guess it made Mike Brown, like, punch something through a window and turn into, like, Robo Black Guy and fucking attack a police officer single-handedly. And now,
the Washington Examiner, when it was created, was envisioned as a conservative competitor to the Washington Post, which is ridiculous because the Washington Post is so not
fucking
anything but
liberal
goddamn
shit.
Conservative. It's ridiculous. They also endorsed John McCain in the 2008 presidential election.
He's on their board.
Mitt Romney, by the way. Just so
fuck. And this is just, you know, this could be a whole other podcast, but the lack of critical thinking when it comes to this shit, and people are like, oh, it's a fucking think tank institute research newspaper. It must be real. There's no agenda to make money and collude all together and perpetuate the dominant narrative lie of bullshit. No way. How could that be?
Ever turned up.
No,
now this story
drugs
isn't
turned
unique.
Up. No
roofies. Panic and questionable allegations about the date rape drug are rampant. Everything from lip gloss to nail polish to coasters has been invented to protect women from rapists armed with roofies.
And that's a bad thing in her mind.
Yeah.
Oh,
God.
Everything from coasters to nail polish.
Coasters. Not the rapists.
Oh, my God.
Not all coasters.
But the evidence doesn't match the hype. In 2005, forensic scientists in the United Kingdom tested blood.
Just want to say, 2005, it's a decade ago. The UK What the hell is going on here?
I'm glad you're paying attention. I didn't do that. Went right by me. 2005.
It's 10 goddamn years ago, and she's doing a study from another country from 10 years ago to back up her bullshit ass
clinical
claims.
Forensic
All right, go
medicine.
Ahead. Keep it going. Let's do this.
In urine for various drugs in more than 1,000 cases where drug facilitated sexual assault was.
And I'm sorry, was even roofies big in 2005?
It wasn't. That's my entire point.
The scientists found that alcohol was the most commonly used substance.
Because that's what you put roofies in, goddammit!
And because that's legal. Fucking... What the fuck does that have to do with anything?
If women were going to bars that served fucking nothing but tea and lemonade, rapists would be putting fucking roofies in tea and lemonade.
This is crazy. Go ahead.
And it was usually consumed voluntarily. Only 20%.
Yeah, because most people force drinks on people.
Could be classified as potential drug-facilitated sexual assault cases. But even with those cases, the researchers warned that they couldn't know for sure whether or not the drugs were taken voluntarily.
Pause it. Wait a second. Let me just get this straight. She's saying that these fucking researchers couldn't tell whether somebody was voluntarily drugged?
You know what that is? I guarantee you, because it's research, and you got to be exact, and you want your shit to be replicated and published. They have to, I don't want to say there's this narrative like there's two sides to every story, but researchers will literally be like, well, there's a 5% chance that this is due to error of this or that. Your theta in looking at research is what are my likelihood of error, right? 5% is rigorous, 10% is less rigorous. They have to say, well, you know what? As part of our possible error in these findings, remote as it may be, we may not know if one of these victims ingested this substance willingly or knowingly. We just can't know.
Let me tell you
because
something.
It was a self-report data from reports at hospitals. That doesn't mean that that's the case. That's just what the research has to say.
Let me tell you something about the two big books that this bitch, Christina Hoff Sommers, bitch, I'm coming for you. Whoa. Let me tell you something. The two books she wrote, widely discussed books, Who Stole Feminism? How Women Have Betrayed Women.
Is this what you're saying the other day? White fucking women that claim to be feminists are destroying the
movement. And the other one, The War Against Boys. How misguided
war
feminism.
Against men.
How
no.
misguided feminism is harming our young
no,
men.
No, she's a men's rights activist. Oh,
this
my God,
bitch
it gets
is
better.
Crazy. She thinks of herself as an equity feminist. I think of you as a bullshit.
She's fucking
artist.
Selling shit. She's fucking,
disgusting.
You
want
to tear somebody down? Tear this fucking person
Gender
down.
Gender feminism.
Good Christ. Tear her down. Tell Christina Hoff Sommers, because this is ridiculous. She's so obviously trying to make money, scaring up a fucking narrative, selling her fucking books, writing this fucking shit, putting out this fucking ugly-ass fucking video. Just ridiculous.
Numerous other studies from around the world have come to the same conclusion. An Australian study of 101 suspected cases found no toxicological evidence that a
101.
Sedative had been added to any drinks. The vast majority of suspected cases involve high levels of alcohol consumption, sometimes illicit drug use, but there is no evidence that covert drink spiking is widespread.
Oh, my God.
You know what? At some point, though, it's like there's anecdotal and there's actual fucking women saying that this shit is happening. Can we just believe them? Do we have to fucking find a mountain of fucking bullshit and ridiculous, questionable, dubious research to try and, like, say that, not all drugs are fucking taken involuntarily and not all men are fucking raping people at parties. There's one red X. Oh, my God.
Ridiculous.
A 2009 study in the British Journal of Criminology
2009, also
that
very
date
recent.
Rape drugs are largely an urban myth. But when the researchers spoke with college women, they found that their perception of the risk of being drugged did not match the reality. More than half of the British students surveyed said that they personally know someone whose drink had been spiked.
I do. I literally do.
You literally do.
I literally spent a fucking day in a hospital with a friend. I had to get her out of a hotel room. I mean, I don't even want to talk about that because it's a trigger for me. Like, I'm literally upset right now. And the whole incident and how she was treated by the police, it was like she was criminalized over and over and over again. And it's like the worst fucking day literally in her life. And I'm upset right now. I'm literally, I almost choked up because I just can't.
Students believed that date rape drugs were more likely to lead to a sexual assault than being drunk or walking alone in a dangerous area at night. The researchers concluded that students often mistakenly linked sickness, blackouts, and dizziness to poisoning by a stranger when it was likely to be caused by excessive alcohol consumption. So what does this all mean? calling date rape drugs a myth may not be quite right. I mean, these drugs do exist, and there are some cases in which women are drugged and sexually assaulted.
Well, thank you for that.
So watching over your drinks at a bar and avoiding fraternity jungle juice might still be a good idea.
It might be.
But a reality check is in order. Our fear of being drugged and sexually assaulted by a predatory stranger in a bar is not grounded in reality. As the British researchers noted, routine...
You know, and I'm not going to give her any fucking acknowledgement, but the risk of a random predatory stranger in a bar may be low. But she didn't say you might not need to go to fraternity. It's fucking ridiculous. You know, because most of these date rapes, she's right. They don't happen randomly from strangers at bars. They fucking happen from people that you fucking know. You know what I mean?
Ridiculous. Listen, I'm...
They happen with your fucking guy you're dating.
How much more of this shit is there, for real?
In drug-facilitated sexual assault is not probable as a widespread crime. Just think about it. It requires a stranger to find the drugs, slip them into a woman's drink undetected, manage to take the victim away from her friends without anyone noticing.
All of that happened to my friend.
And reliably erase her memory of the experience.
Most commonly,
victims of drug-facilitated sexual assault are severely intoxicated, often from their own volition. Paranoia over the date rape drug causes us to misplace our anxieties. And feminists should be concerned that women are modifying their behavior on their girls' nights out in order to protect themselves from some vague.
Oh, God forbid women take care of themselves. God forbid women be empowered to help themselves.
I think that Adam Burgess, one of the University of Kent researchers, had a good explanation. The reason why fear of drink spiking has become widespread seems to be a mix of it being more convenient to guard against than the effects of alcohol itself and the fact that such stories are exotic, like a more adult version of stranger danger. Do you think our cultural fear of date rape drugs is unfounded? Are you satisfied with Dr. Burgess's explanation?
Adam Burke is a comedian, just FYI.
Yeah, she might be right about those things, but that's still...
She's not right about any of those things.
This is disgusting.
She's not right about any of... She might not be right about nothing.
My friend knew the person, so it wasn't a stranger. But the fuck?
But the point of date rape and using Rohypnol is not about a stranger.
No, it's not.
When you go out for a girl's night, you're not hanging out with strangers.
She's a men's rights activist.
She's fucking crazy.
Get the fuck.
She's crazy.
I need like a Silkwood shower.
Honest to goodness, I don't think I can listen to any more of it. We have to stop.
I literally need a shower.
I can't. I can't listen. Don't even put the end of it up. I don't even want anybody
to listen.
I just closed it. Please. Because I can't.
Let's go on to something.
You know, her fucking book, I'm just reading a few things about it now that you brought this up. We're doing another spinoff podcast. It's going to be called No Bitch Left Behind. It's coming in a couple of weeks. It's myself and my good friend. I won't say who she is because I'll let her decide what she wants
MBLB.
To be called. MBLB. And we're going to be tackling issues related to women, girls, and feminism. She is a white woman and I'm a black one, and we're going to just kind of talk about these issues. And trust, this bitch will be brought up forthright.
Please.
Definitely. Also,
I'll be listening to that.
In her book, she talks about girls and boys and how they learn, but she's never done any research that has to do with boys or girls. She basically comes after people that have done those things, have done the research, have actually done studies with children, and attacks their findings based on her bullshit ass POV. It's just crazy. She even goes after Carol
Gilligan.
And
then the shit she uses to attack is so dubious.
It's just
2005.
Crazy. UK, get the fuck out of here. All right, let's just get to it. What are we doing next?
We're doing track to trailer.
All right, let's do it. Get that going.
All right.
Track to trailer!
All right. So you might remember our last one was White People, Dear White People. And so track to trailer, we're going to look at trailers and talk about the trailer and what they're trying to do and whether they convey the sense of the point of the movie. And then we're going to follow the trailer's evolution from the sort of first release and various incarnations, and then see the movie and see how much everything holds up. As a preeminent example, the Jerry Maguire movie came out with a trailer that was all about this being a chick flick. And then a couple of weeks later, it's like, oh, it's a dude's movie. You know, show me the money.
Right.
So this week we're doing, what are we doing?
The first teaser for the new Avengers movie comes out next year. Oh. So we'll probably do a few track the trailers for this.
Age of Ultron. I haven't even seen this one yet. Have you?
No, I have not. Let's do it.
All right. This following preview is approved for all audiences.
I'm going to show you something beautiful. Everyone screaming for mercy. You want to protect the world, but you don't want it to change. You're all puppets. Tangled in strings. Strings.
Pinocchio song. Oh, that's the, those twins. One of them is Quicksilver.
It's the end. The end of the path I started us on.
Nothing lasts forever.
I fucking love this version of the Hulk. Yeah. I'm finally gonna grow.
Okay, super Iron Man. That's Scarlet Witch, by the way. Which one's this?
Now I'm free.
You can change Captain America, dude. No. That Quicksilver looks weak as hell.
There are. I like strings on me.
Yeah. On fucking awesome.
This shit looks awesome.
God damn, I love Avengers. We saw that shit in the theater twice.
Hell yeah, we did.
So it's a teaser, and it's the long form one. And I don't know how much you can really interpret from it, but fucking it looks awesome.
Like crazy amounts of action per usual. They show the Hulk like kind of in distress as Bruce Banner and then badass as the Hulk per usual. They had Ultron like.
And how many other Hulks were there before they had the Ang Lee one, right?
Right. That was the one. Yeah, that was the first one. I don't remember who the guy is that did that one. And then they had the one with, what's his name? The one from Edward Norton, he did
right.
one. So and he like helped write that one.
They had two Hulk movies that were total mm-hmm. shit.
Yeah.
They finally got. I hope they don't do a Hulk origin. I hope they leave Ruffalo in just the Avengers. Like, I don't think they need a Hulk like no, they have all the other origin stories because they fucked it up.
So, the movie looks great. They've got, you know, all the Avengers are there and Nick Fury's up in the mix. They got everybody rocking and rolling. But you remember we were talking about the bullshit DC, you know,
sure,
layout
the slate
of everything.
Of movies,
so, you know, the last year they had 2020, they said that there was going to be a Cyborg movie.
Okay.
So the dude that's playing Cyborg in these movies they already have scheduled to come out is like, oh, nobody told me about that.
Shut the fuck
up. Not joking.
They're
like, oh, did you hear Cyborg 2020? Like, you excited? He's like, oh, nobody told me about that. Oh, cool.
I guess. Yay. It's
crazy.
6 years from now. Just hope they don't replace me.
So, if anybody doesn't know, I have a bet going with the black guy who tips.
Right.
Roderick. And the bet is that Roderick Goodell will not have a job by September 11th, 2015.
I like this bet.
Goodell must go. So, I say he will. Rod says he will not. And so, we have this bet going. So, I guess, Veriweka, you found some sort of website called Long Bets or something?
Yeah, longbets.org.
So, what's the deal with it?
So, it's the arena for accountable predictions. The purpose of Long Bets is to improve long-term thinking. Long Bets is a public arena for enjoyable competitive predictions of interest to society with philanthropic money at stake. The Long Now Foundation furnishes the community to see even the longest bets through to public resolution. This website provides a forum for discussion about what may be learned from the bets and their eventual outcomes. Mm-hmm. So it's there's an individual that makes the bet, and then there's a challenger. So like right now, the one that's on their homepage is over a 10-year period commencing January 1, 2008 and ending December 31st, 2017, the S&P 500 will outperform a portfolio of funds of hedge fund managers when performance is measured on a basis net of fees, costs, and expenses. And the stakes are $1 million. And Warren Buffett's predicted the $1 million that the S&P will outperform all other smart hedge fund dudes, and the challenger is Protege Partners LLC, obviously a hedge fund manager.
Right.
So they're,
so they're betting an actual $1 million. Somebody's going to get $1 million in 2017.
So Buffett wins, $1 million goes to Girls Incorporated.
Nice.
And if the Protege Partners wins, $1 million goes to Friends of Absolute Return for Kids, Inc.
This is profiting off of long bets.
This profiting. So I thought you and Rod could have totally done the Roger Goodell bet here, it wouldn't have been $20 to each other. You'd have had to bet $20 to some charity.
Oh, to charity. Oh, because it's all charity based.
Correct.
Oh, I see.
Correct.
That's cool. I love
it
that.
Cool. It is cool.
That's really neat.
So they've got a whole bunch.
People love to bet.
I want to go through some and I want to see what your side would be for some
all right,
of these.
Let's do it. I'm ready.
Like five of them.
Okay. I'll fucking bet. Let's do it.
Let's do it. So by the end of 2017, a major protest will feature a drone versus drone aerial confrontation. Now, there's a little bit more. And this one, oddly, the voting has been temporarily disabled. I don't know if it's getting – they were on maybe like CNN, saying they're getting too much page. So there's a – and I won't read this for everyone, but each bet then has sort of the person who's making the bet's argument. And he says aerial surveillance drones are well on the way to becoming part of every major law enforcement
agency. Now, don't read them all. Let's just do strike through them.
Okay. Well, and then there's also, and this one doesn't have it, but some of them have the conditions for the bet.
Okay.
So,
I gotcha.
Like, what do you need to
what
do?
What does it meet?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, this would have to probably be videoed or something.
It doesn't say. It's not okay. here. But, so, it's unchallenged. Well, it's unchallenged. You okay. can challenge it. So,
I'm
by 2017, a major protest will feature a drone versus drone aerial confrontation.
I'm going to say no for that
You're
one.
You're going to say no.
Yeah, I would say nizzo.
That's 2 years. That might be
too
soon.
Too soon. 2017. If they said 2025, I might say yeah. I just don't think personal drones are at that point yet.
So here's one that actually we know the outcome from. So in a Google search of five keywords or phrases representing the top five news stories of 2007, weblogs will rank higher than the New York Times website.
I'll agree with that.
And you would be correct. Dave was the winner.
Yeah, that does not surprise me at all.
It did happen.
Yeah.
Okay.
But for two reasons, I thought that would be true. One, because the New York Times notoriously puts quite a bit of its content behind a firewall. So if you don't have a subscription with them, you can't read all of their articles. So sometimes you'll see them and it's like, if you know that, you won't click. And then secondarily, like nobody even believes the New York Times is credible anymore. You know, no angel and all that.
Well, this was 2007. So at least one human alive in the year 2000 will still be alive in 2150. They'll be 150 years old. 2150.
No.
No. Okay. This is a $2,000 bet. One of them will go to the Chabot Space.
People
and
are not
Center,
getting that much healthier.
Or the Action International Foundation. People are not getting that much healthier.
They are not.
Okay.
I don't believe so. No.
Okay. This is one of my favorites. By 2025, so we've got about 10 years now, by 2025, the scientific evidence of a hitherto unknown large bipedal great ape will be sufficient to convince at least 50% of primatologists that a Yeti-like Bigfoot creature exists.
No.
No.
Definitely not.
Okay. There's some detailed terms.
There's no Bigfoot.
So listen to the terms. A survey of working primatologists asking them whether they accept the existence of a large, greater than 2 meters, bipedal ape. Meaning, do they believe in Bigfoot?
No.
So you're going to say no? Okay.
No.
He's got $800 on the line.
Yeah, I bet he does.
Okay.
He's going to be coughing that up to whatever charity that is good for that charity.
Here's one that's, I think, right.
But who's to say that the first bet should be, will this site be active when all these bets come to fruition?
Will Longbet be around when all these bets come to fruition?
Yeah, that should be the first.
Put it up there, and I guarantee you they'll challenge it. Whatever your bet is, you got to put your money where your mouth is, but they'll challenge it for sure.
Okay.
Okay, so by the end of the year 2020, a professional sports team that's a part of either the National Football League, the NBA, the Major League Baseball, or National Hockey League, or Major League Soccer will integrate and have a woman as a team member player.
No.
No.
What, 2020? No.
Interesting. Listen to these terms. A woman or a person who identifies as a woman. Does that change your vote now? Because that could be someone who's, you know... Not cisgendered.
Nope.
A woman or a person who identifies
the thing is,
as
there's
a
chicks in the WNBA right now that could school some of these NBA players. And I just don't see it happening.
Okay.
Nope.
Next one. This is the last one. By 2060, the total population of humans on Earth will be less than it is today.
2060?
2060. That's unchallenged. It is put up by the owner of the website, or the guy who founded the website.
I say no on that one, too.
You say no.
Yeah.
Okay. And there were also detailed terms. Three professional demographers specializing in global census who agree on the population of humans December 31st, 2060.
I'm going to say no on that
you
one,
say
too.
No. Okay.
How much did he bet for that?
No one's challenged it yet, so there's zero.
So you have to challenge before the bet goes up?
Interesting. Someone makes the prediction.
This could be interesting. I'm going to put some long bets in myself.
Well, so there's predictions.
Can we bet on the Eagles to win the Super Bowl?
Yeah, absolutely. So you could make a prediction, and then somebody would make a bet, and you'd either challenge or accept it. So first thing would be the Eagles will win the Super Bowl before what? What's the over-under in your mind?
Let's see. Chip just started. Let's give him 6 years.
6 years? That's a long time.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think Foles is going to do it.
It's
got to be a new quarterback. 2020. Yeah, I say
is
that.
Is it the season that ends 2020 or the season that ends 2021? The season that ends 2021.
What do they say? Like the Super Bowl 2020, whatever that is. I don't know how they clarify it, but that would be
Season that technically ends in 2020.
Yeah.
That was played in 2019.
Yeah. Okay. That's the one. That's what I was
saying. Super Bowl 2020. The Eagles will have won a Super Bowl. By March 2020.
Yeah.
Okay. You should put that prediction in.
I might.
You're going to have to defend it, though. Money to charity and shit.
Yeah, yeah. I can just put like $20 out, though, right?
You can.
Okay.
But others might come in, like somebody from Dallas might be like, I fucking challenge you $100,000.
But then I don't have to accept it, do I?
No.
This is interesting. All right, so longbets.com. Check it out, people. Yeah, sounds pretty cool.
No, longbets.org.
Oh, sorry. Longbets.org. Oh, because it's for charity. Got it. Longbets.org.
Baby.
They're profiting.
They're just profiting. So that was.
What are they getting? Clicks, probably, huh? Ads or something?
There's not a whole lot of ads on it.
Interesting.
It's just an interesting sort of foundation.
Cool.
But so you talked about this the other day, and I want you to give your perspective.
Yeah.
Because I'm biased. I'm a son of a mother.
You are.
But you were talking about these viral mother-son wedding
dance
videos.
Dude, I am so fucking sick of these mother-son wedding videos.
Do tell.
So I don't know if anybody's seen them, but there's been a string of them coming out where they have the daddy-daughter dance and then they have the mother-son dance at the wedding, usually after the first dance of the couple. And now there's these elaborate, 5+ minute choreographed and clearly well rehearsed.
You're talking like coordinated, like
yes.
They do the Dougie, they
do
this.
All sorts. Okay. It's like a whole choreographed dance.
Wasn't this a thing with brides? The first dance, didn't brides and grooms do this?
Now, brides and grooms can do whatever the frick they want.
No, but I'm saying they did the start of this craze was with brides and grooms.
Right, and then they had a bunch that was like the whole bridal party did something together, okay. Like all the groomsmen and bridesmaids, which I think is also fine. It adds to the festivity of the day. But this specific thing, and I actually have the same irritation when it's if it would be an elaborate father-daughter dance, I just think it's weird. It's weird for a few reasons for me. One, because no offense to all of you sons and mothers of sons out there, but this ain't your fucking day. It's the bride's day. So let's just start with that one. And even if you say, well, it's the groom's day too.
Dang, that's one.
Even if you say it's the groom's day too, fine. But it's not the mother-in-law's day. It's a day for the couple to celebrate their union. I'm okay with this moment that is given homage in the ceremony, or I should say in the reception, for the father and the daughter to dance together, for the mother and the son to dance together. But to turn it into something that clearly this groom spent time, money, and a lot of effort in practicing leading up to, and then have the bride standing on the sidelines watching this shit. And if you see the look in these mothers' eyes, let me just tell you something. They look like no one's going to say anything about that wedding except for about that mother-son dance. And it's wrong. It's not right.
Not that it always happens this way. I don't think it happens this way as much as it used to, but the father of the bride's paying for the wedding, and now the father of the bride and the bride are sitting there watching the groom and mommy have some fucking weird Oedipal dance.
It's just weird and like super creepy.
It's a little clingy.
And the moms are so into it.
Under mom's
they have this like crazy look on their faces, like, oh, look at me, I'm so cool dancing with my son doing the Dougie. It's so freaking weird.
Well,
I just find it, it's like it skeeves me out. And then they always have a pan where the bride's standing on the side. And even though she's cheering them on or whatever, I know when she watches back the video of that day, that's going to be the part everyone wants to watch. And it would just stick in my tooth, under my craw, and eat me alive. And I'm just saying, to me, it's just a precursor for like, expect this bitch to be buttoning your life forever. Forever. You have set a tone that it's okay for her to insert herself into all of the special things that you and your husband want to do together, because you've said from day one can do that. And it's not a good thing.
No, it's definitely creepy. It's
super creepy.
Well, and the wedding, we've talked about this before, but men typically gravitate towards the wives' family when it comes to Thanksgiving and Christmas and all the other stuff. So there's a little bit of a letting go of my son, for the mother of the...
Which I don't mind the moment. Well, I think it's fine to give homage and pay, special attention for a moment to this relationship. I'm okay with
so
that.
So what if the coordinated dance included the bride a little bit more? And what if the coordinated dance at the end, the mom was like, I'm giving you my son.
That's extra creepy.
That wouldn't help it at all.
That's creepier. Yeah.
We have a friend that was I won't say who because they might be listening. But so their mother-in-law was there, and somebody, one of the people were sick, and the mother-in-law said, "Oh, you're not withholding sex from him, are you?"
No, she wasn't sick. They just had a baby.
Oh, right. But still, can you imagine your mother-in-law like, oh, "You're not withholding sex from him, are you?" Like, ah.
But it wasn't his mother; it was her mother. Looking after her son.
It's a little bit less creepy.
It's just slightly less creepy because you can talk to your daughter about those things if it's your child. But just all of you mothers out there with sons, you can take a moment to pay homage to the special bond you share with your son as he gets married. But let's just keep the focus on the couple. That's all I'm saying.
I love you, Mom.
I love you too, Mom.
You're the best.
You are. You're awesome. But you did not do a choreographed dance with your son.
I couldn't do a choreographed dance with my wife. Couldn't even do that.
Yeah, you could not do that.
I am two left feet in addition to being very, very white.
True story.
Very true. Let's talk about TV.
Because
there's been a lot of really good TV
Yeah,
lately.
good stuff, yeah.
I think I would just say right to the How to Get Away with Murder. It's one of my favorite. Shout out to Shonda.
Not my favorite, but
I know.
Yours.
I really dig the Law and Order, formulaic.
You kind of dig it because when I ask you pointed questions about what happened in the episode, fail to be able to tell me.
Because I tweet too much. I like the live tweet. I got to stop doing that. That's a show that
everyone says that too. You got to kind of fucking pay attention to that show. And then I ask you a question and you're like, oh, I don't know how that happened.
Duh.
Like I said a major thing I'm not going to say here because you were like, wait, what?
It took me a second. I was like, oh, yeah, that's what happened.
Yeah, okay.
I answered it.
After I gave you the answer.
No, you didn't give me the answer.
I literally do my nails during that show because I find it so boring.
Well, anyway, so Viola Davis's character took off her wig and eyelashes.
I have a question about that. She took off her wig, but the other week she had her wig wrapped on her head. So.
Yeah, well, people. It's almost as if Shonda knew about that because people were cracking on that on Twitter.
No, it's like the white person wrote the first episode, and Shonda was like, whoa.
She doesn't put a wrap on a wig. She puts it on a stand.
You could have had her with a wrap with a cap on over her whole head, showing that it wasn't a sleep cap. That's fine, but you can't have the wig wrapped while she's sleeping. That looks crazy.
Looks stupid.
You look crazy. Looks like somebody's Alzheimer's ridden aunt. Not good.
I'll ask this of you because I know that. So you maybe about 4 or 5 years ago did the big chop, right?
Did, yes.
And do you see Viola Davis is taking her wig off on TV on a primetime show, in some way moving the needle and towards in terms of black women and sort of the notion of beauty with regards to black women? Do you see that moving at all because of this? Is this a bellwether of sorts?
I would say that except for that freaking, going back to New York Times, the New York Times article that came out saying that Viola was not traditionally beautiful.
Was that really, is that before or after this whole business?
It was
taken off.
It was before. It was before the review of Shonda, whatever. But I don't know. It's hard to say. I think that
New York Times is going to tear fucking people down. So don't, let's not.
No, but honestly, this is my real thought on the whole situation. Do I think that it changes the notion in terms of black women beauty? No, I don't. Do I think that? I think that most of white America are going to be completely confused by the entire thing and what's going on with Viola's hair or what might be going on. I don't think that they have any clue about the issues surrounding hair and black women for the most part.
I would say for a primer, watch Girlfriends. I don't know the season, but the episode was called Everything Fishy Ain't Fish.
Yeah. That's a great one.
Where Tony Childs dates the white guy who's running for mayor of Los Angeles.
Mayoral candidate.
Yeah. Right. He discovers that my girlfriend's hair is a weave.
It's a weave.
So
but I'm not even saying
that
about the weave because the weave is just
No, I'm just saying that white people don't know shit about, black women's hair.
But even beyond the black women's hair knowledge, I mean more about the issues surrounding black women's hair, I think is what I'm really talking about. I don't think that that scene is going to change anything unless it is followed up with a discussion about that, which is not going to be on the show because it wouldn't be necessary or appropriate. Now, I do think that going into... Are you done talking about...
No, I was
going
to say, though, but you're talking about white people's misunderstanding or lack of knowledge or understanding or appreciation of black women's hair and care. You know, my evolution of that, when you started going natural and did the big job, I had to understand and learn a lot new terms. And I've asked you questions. I'm fortunate that you're forgiving.
So did I.
You know? Well, but so I would say if you did like a Family Feud style, like 100 people say, survey says, if you asked white people, just generally 100 fucking white people about black women's hair, I just think like 90% would have no fucking clue.
Agreed.
Like no clue. Like what do you mean if it gets wet, it gets kinky? What do you mean you got to use a hot comb? And what do you mean you got to get a relaxer? Like, they would know shit. Like, literally, like, not even not a little bit. Like, complete. Like, honestly, like, here's
all three of those things you said are troubling in the way that you said them. Just FYI.
That's how white people would say it, though.
Oh, okay.
I'm being the douchey white person.
Oh, okay.
I was playing a character.
Okay,
I wasn't me. I don't fucking think those things. Okay. Come on. What the fuck?
Just making sure.
Thank you for the clarification. Thank you for the trust.
Just checking.
Okay.
People are hearing this. I just want to make sure we're clear on what you're talking about.
That was the douchey white character. In fact, we'll do it from now on. What do you mean we're going to talk about? That's douchey white guy. That's not very white guy. That's douchey white guy.
Got it.
Okay. So.
DWG. Got it.
So, but again, I just think that the lack of, honestly, like when you hear people say to you like, oh, I love your hair that way. Part of that is astounding that they're literally telling you that they're shocked and surprised that your hair can be in different ways. It's like, oh, wow, I didn't know that it could be straight and it can also be kinky.
Well, I think of it differently because when they say that to me, it just says to me that their idea of beauty is that my hair needs to be straight.
Well, but I feel like you get it both ways.
When you do a
finger coil, people make comments.
No, they don't. Black people do. White people never do.
I always do.
White people never say. Well, you don't count.
That's my favorite
style. White people don't ever say anything about my hair unless it's straight. That's a fact. Write that down. Take a note.
Microaggression.
White people. It's aggressive.
That's all I got to say about it.
Keep your notions about my hair to your motherfucking self.
And how to get away with murder.
Because I don't care what you think about my hair.
Well, I care about your hair.
Yes, I know. I care what you think about my hair.
You know, I'm almost a little embarrassed to admit this, but like, I feel like it's like my hair too.
You're very invested in my hair. It's true.
I don't know why. You've talked about like it's at a length now where you maybe want to do another big chop.
I do because it's so long.
Just the amount of products and the time.
And I'm literally detangling it.
You haven't done a finger coil in forever because the amount of.
Oh my god! My hand would cramp up. I have to go to the salon to get that shit done.
And the twists have gotten like bigger and bigger.
Oh my god! Because I just can't deal with it.
I totally appreciate it. And even now, like hair, like to do your hair, like I'll go play the harp in the garage for 2 hours. I'll mow the lawn. Like I appreciate it. Takes quite a bit of time.
Yeah, but I dread it. I'm like, oh, it's washed day.
I'm not really ready to.
To let it go. I'll let it go for a little while longer anyways.
Thank you.
We'll see. So speaking of a show that could, though, have a discussion about hair, Black-ish is in its, I think, third or fourth week now. Yeah. I think it's the fourth episode.
Give a ding to that. That show is in
so
its wheel.
So funny. This past week, or last night's episode was about spanking. Great discussion.
It's so timely. Like, they couldn't have written that and filmed it after Adrian Peterson?
No,
is that
definitely
possible?
Not. No. Right? I think it was before. But I think these issues also would come up. And it's interesting. So I do, I hope, I'm praying, and I can't imagine they won't have a hair episode.
Oh, they have to.
They have two, you know, young
Tracy
girls
Ellis
on the show.
Is amazing to show.
She's biracial on the show as well as in real life. So I think that might come into play too.
Sure.
So I think it's going to be really cool. I can't wait for them to discuss it because that youngest girl, Diana, cracks me the F up. She's so funny. I follow her on Twitter, and she's even funny on Twitter, just to let you know.
Yeah.
She was finished. She goes, it's 11 o'clock here, y'all. I'm going to bed. I got to wrap my hair and go to bed. That's a direct quote from her.
Direct quote.
The actress. Hilarious.
The thing that I love, there's a lot I love about Black-ish, but primarily with comedies nowadays, the fucking laugh track kills me.
Low laugh
track. And really what the laugh track does is it slows the pacing of the show down.
For sure.
Google Big Bang Theory, no laugh track.
Oh, God.
It's fucking painful.
It's painful.
They tell these jokes and sit
there in silence.
It's
painful with the laugh track.
It's horrible. So the pacing and timing of the show is, A, much improved. You get like a higher joke per minute ratio.
For sure. Sure.
And they use a little bit of the sort of like flashback and sort of like in their head thinking. So, you know, sort of like breaking the third wall kind of stuff. But I just think it's fantastic.
Well, they use a lot. They do use voiceover. It's only Anthony Anderson's character because it's him that the show is really about. But I'll everybody on that show is doing such a great job. Fishburne is killing it.
Have we never seen him in comedy before? He's
not
fucking hilarious.
Not this broad a comedy, for sure.
He is hilarious.
He's had some tongue-in-cheek roles and things like that, but nothing this broad. It's so funny.
When Junior comes out bawling, and he's like,
oh, come here to Papa. Wait, first he goes, I told you to spank him, not break his spirit.
Well, because the kid says, I disappointed him.
My dad. Oh, so great. Good episode.
To whoop him, not break his spirit.
Not break his spirit. You're love a it. Monster.
I love it. You know, what was the other show we were watching?
Marry Me.
Right.
That's on NBC, and it stars Casey Wilson, formerly fucking from Happy hilarious. Endings, and I can never remember
Super Crackers.
Name. Super Crackers.
His name's not. His name's Ken.
Oh my gosh, Ken something. Marino.
Ken Marino.
Right? Yeah. Ken
and
Marino.
And he did. Oh my god.
He was
god.
In Veronica Mars.
No, but what was the web series?
Vinnie
he
Van
did?
Lowe.
The fucking
oh, Burning Love. Yeah.
If you all haven't seen Burning Love, it's a fucking hilarious spoof. There's two seasons, but he plays a fireman in the first one. A spoof
it's
of
a spoof
like
of
dating
the Bachelor.
Yeah, the Bachelor.
It's a scoop of the Bachelor.
Holy shit! Is it hilarious?
Yeah.
And he's great in it. But
he's
so,
so funny.
He played on another great show called Party Down.
Down. Yeah.
Where he was an event coordinator
boss,
planner.
Yeah.
There's only maybe two seasons on, I think, Showtime. Yeah. But at the end, he formed his own, he opened a franchise called Soup or Crackers. And it was serving soup and crackers. So just forever, whenever we see Ken Marino, we just
Super Crackers.
Super Crackers.
Super Crackers.
That's his name, Super Crackers.
He's very funny. He also was on MTV's The State back in the day.
Right.
He's just hilarious. He's like
both
one of those,
timing,
he's one
though.
Of those like good looking guys, but he's not so good looking that he can't be funny.
Right.
Like he's in that area of like, yeah, he's good looking, but he's not like Rob Lowe where it's like you
right.
know.
He can be schmarmy and self-deprecating,
right?
And it comes off.
It comes off funny,
genuine, yeah.
yeah. It's really
well.
He's
him
hilarious.
And Casey have just great timing.
Great
I love
chemistry.
Her. I was so sad to see Happy Endings go.
Yeah.
But it's the same showrunner, the guy that did
yeah,
Happy Endings.
Yeah, who's her husband in real life? Actually,
oh, I didn't know that.
FYI, yeah,
good for her.
So it's about a couple. The first episode, they get engaged, and it's all this hilarity that Sue's around there. Crazy relationship, and she has two gay dads played by one of them is Tim Meadows, who's hilarious. And they have a group of friends. One of
the other guy's
is
the
black,
guy from Scandal,
right? And right, the gay husband on Scandal.
Oh, is he getting typecast?
Burkowski, I think, is his last name. Dan, yeah, and he's also Lisa Kudrow's producing partner. They produce.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, a bunch of shows.
And her shit's coming back out, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's coming out soon.
What's
too.
That called again?
The Comeback.
The Comeback.
Valerie
Cherish.
I'm excited wait. About that. And they also have a couple of friends. They have a slovenly Zach Galifianakis type
right.
friend, male friend. They have a.
What's and he was in something that we thought was funny.
He's in Broad City.
Right, he dates yeah. the, he was the boyfriend
the
of,
roommate dater.
Or the roommate dater.
Yeah,
the, right,
we never see
right,
the roommate,
right,
just the
right,
boyfriend.
Right.
And then they have another character who is, I guess, we can't figure out if she's a sister or best friend, but she's a blonde white woman, she's funny. And then they have a black female lesbian friend as
right.
well, who's very snarky, super sarcastic, and slightly dumb. She's funny, though.
And you know, the blonde girl, I generally have a disdain for, and no disrespect, not all blondes, I don't hate blondes, but there's I call them peck bird girls, right? These tiny, like, waif, like, you know, under 100 pound, you know, like peck little bird girls. They're usually blonde, and I don't know, something about that, maybe my high school years, is grating to me, but this particular, she's a peck bird girl, but she's funny. I like
yeah,
her.
Yeah, she is funny. She got good timing. The cast is good. So that's on NBC.
I'm going to get fucking not
funny.
All blondes.
You
like
are.
Hate mail.
Yeah, people are going to start writing.
I'm
you.
Sorry.
Terrible.
I'm sorry.
For sure.
The interracial John just fucking ruined it with blondes.
Ruined
God
it.
God damn it.
And then Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s been firing on like a billion cylinders.
Yeah, that shit's on point. I
they
like
ain't
it.
Playing on that show.
It, you know, I remember when it first came out, I was a little bit down on it, like the first few episodes, and it slowly picked up. And I, again, think they're really kind of firing on all cylinders. I like that show.
Very good.
And they've got the right balance of, I think, villain of the week plus sort of like
the lore
the,
stuff.
Yeah, the long
on.
Arc kind
right.
of stuff. Yeah.
And it's definitely become more of a spy show now that S.H.I.E.L.D.
right.
is like, you know, covert again, and it's not a government agency anymore. So I like all of those things. And I think it's going to lead directly, I'm sure, into the Avengers movie. So I'm excited to see that kind of situation
good time,
happen
sure.
and all of that, because it really picked up after the Captain America movie came out last year. And all the things that you said about the first couple episodes, that it was slow, and a couple of the performances were wooden. Like, in hindsight, it all made sense exactly how they did it. And of course, even Joss Whedon and his brother are the executive producers and showrunners of it, so it makes complete sense.
Yeah, the guy that's the turncoat, the guy that...
Right,
I remember thinking, like, oh, his character this, the character that. I was like, oh, fucking course.
He's
a makes sense.
Makes
yeah.
Sense. Spoiler alert. Okay, so the other thing that's been coming up is some people watch stuff in a season behind, though. A lot of people, actually.
I'll have to shout. Somebody. Carl's going to get mad at me for spoiling more
spoiler
shit.
Spoiler alert.
That's a very white guy. My
so
privilege.
So a trend
shit.
That we've been seeing on TV is couples like us on TV. Black woman, white man. It seems like every TV show, every new TV show is like that. You have to have one.
Yeah. Although there's a, when we discussed this, I wonder if there's a little bit of a like, there's a obviously a desire to have a more multicultural, you know, viewing experience and show, you know, black women. But they almost to the exclusion of like, black women, black male love, right? Like, it's like, well, we can't have black people in love, but I can love a white guy. You know what I mean? Because you don't see even the reverse. You don't see as much black man, white woman on TV nearly as you do black woman, white man.
Yeah.
Right?
You mean white woman, black man?
Yeah, I said that backwards.
Okay, just making sure. That's definitely less common.
Right.
It's there, but it's not as, I don't think, and to me, it's just become something that's like trendy. So everybody thinks they need to have one. That's the way I see it. Less that it's, you know, a statement about something, but that, you know how there's like two volcano movies or two Snow White movies or two whatever TV shows, you know, fairy tale TV shows, two Secretary of State, female Secretary of State TV shows. To me, it's like they only have certain things, tropes that they can go to. And because of the success of Scandal specifically, I think, has led to a lot of this being like, oh, yeah, we can do that. We can do this. We can do that. Mm. So we just made, you and I just like,
you know,
made a general list.
Either way, I appreciate and like the outcome. I like seeing.
And I also think that it gives space for a discussion about race that would be difficult with the other pairing.
Why? Because you think that there's a different opinion about a black man and a white woman?
No, it's not about the opinion. It's about the specific POV from the black woman perspective versus the black male one.
Okay. I got you.
I think it's not a judgment thing. I just think that in writing, I think that the writers find it easier to have discussions about race coming from a black female perspective than they would from a black male.
Certainly,
one.
How many, you know, strong black male leads are there in TV? Period. Much less to have relationships
zero?
With white women, right? I think
Taye Diggs. Is there another?
Is he the
one?
Lead?
He's the lead on that Murder One show or whatever.
Oh, you're
that
right.
Show
you're right.
Is.
Murder One. You're right. You're right.
He is?
USA. A TNT.
Yeah,
cable.
TNT. I'm trying to think of any others. Luther?
Is that BBC?
BBC America, yeah. I'm trying to think of other ones.
There just
ones.
Aren't a lot. So,
no.
to say that they're not, obviously it's not a surprise that there are a few relationships with black men and white women just because there are a lot of black male leads on TV, period.
Right. I'm trying to look and see. Well, obviously Anthony Anderson, but that's a sitcom, but still he's definitely the lead.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of who else.
Gosh, it shouldn't be this hard.
It shouldn't be, but it is.
Well, let's go through our list because you said Scandal, and that was obviously I think the
Andre Brower.
What, Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
Yeah, Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Okay,
I guess yeah, okay. Right, maybe
he's gay in the show. Not that it matters. But
that doesn't matter. But
we're talking about dating a white woman.
Oh so. Yeah, I guess it's true. But his husband's white.
Kevin,
just
is,
saying,
his husband Kevin is
his
white.
Husband,
you're right.
His husband
right.
Kevin is white.
We'll give that a ding.
right. Okay. So we had Scandal. Which is a love triangle with the black woman and two.
Yeah. She got two white
men.
Guys.
Team Jake for a life.
Go.
Scott Foley's eyes.
And then your favorite show.
Sleepy Hollow.
A cabbie.
Yes. Love a cabbie.
Although, are they still like they're in that like
no,
will they
won't
they?
No, they're in that will they won't they, but it's clear that there's serious chemistry. And they also added a new pairing, a black woman, her sister is now
right
with not with but certainly starting to have some sort of love something with the new white guy they introduced this year, the blonde
guy. I
gotta
just shout out to Sleepy Hollow and Abby and her tight t-shirts. Thank you.
She ain't playing.
Thank you. She wears a tight t-shirt,
tight t-shirt, tight black pants and boots.
She
and her hair, her flat iron be laid. I love her. She follows me on Twitter, too. I love
her. I was looking at the T-shirt.
I was not.
Well, here's another one that's got, a really attractive black woman. The Vampire Diaries.
TVD, that's right. Vampire Diaries has Jeremy, who's my crush on that show, one Steve McQueen III. He is, yes, the grandson of the Steve McQueen. And his girlfriend on it is Bonnie, the Black Witch.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. That show is so funny. I was telling you about how her mom is played by Lynn from Girlfriends.
Right.
And her grandmother is played by Jasmine Guy. Which
right.
Timing-wise, makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
They're like contemporaries.
I mean, I know black don't crack, but for real? Come on. Really?
Well.
And Kat is like a billion years old. She plays a teenager and she's like 30.
She's so gorgeous.
She looks amazing, though.
She does.
Yeah. Nashville has a main couple is a black background singer who's just starting to come into her own and a songwriter who is white. They are together, living together.
I don't watch that show. I
love that show. Music's so good on that show. Okay. I hope they continue. I think they're making money off the music, so I have a feeling that will.
Well, they keep, I guess I don't watch it, but they do like, it seems like every episode they have like a music video in the middle of the show.
Not
like
a music video, but they have a lot. They do have live performances. They have a lot of music in every
episode. So they must be selling it.
Yeah, they have it. You can buy it on
iTunes.
That's
a good way to monetize.
You can see it on Spotify.
Good for them.
And all the actors sing, so that's a requirement for the show. They sing their own songs.
Okay.
FYI.
They had a homeless guy singing this last week.
Yeah, Michael T. Williams, I think.
Wasn't he the guy from, who was it?
From Forrest Gump.
Yeah, Bubba Gump, right.
Michael T. Is it Williams or Washington?
I don't remember.
I don't remember.
But I think it was Bubba.
It's him. It is Bubba. Gotham. They got Fish Mooney.
Right.
Hooking up with that Russian dude, just singing. Right, and she's got a little thing with Donald Logue, too,
I think. She does. There's an odd...
There's something going on there.
Yeah.
My Parenthood favorite. Is your Parenthood. Favorite.
You know, just real quick, if you aren't watching this drama, it's a little tearjerker, sometimes a little bit, you know, sappy or this, that. But
It's real, though.
It's good. They go there, is
they
what
do.
I would say.
They really do. They had an episode last season about the N-word.
Right.
Literally. I mean, who has that kind of discussion? It was so great to have this white father have to talk to his black son about this and have the parents have to have that discussion with each other. I just loved everything that they did, how they handled it. And that, of course, you have a biracial son. It's something that you're going to have to talk to him about. Yeah. So,
you know, their greatest achievement in the show, I give the writers, and I'll give the actor.
Making you like Dax Shepard?
like fucking Everybody Hates Raymond.
Ray Romano.
He is not Ray Romano.
No. He's Hank.
He's Hank.
Yeah.
And the whole bit where he's kind of coming to the realization that he's on the autism spectrum. That just one that they wrote it and that, you know, the way that he acted it and portrayed it. Oh, man.
And I'm betting there's a lot of people who would have to come to terms with that as adults. Because if something's not diagnosed earlier, it's like, oh, that's what's been wrong with me. You know, people that are on the spectrum, but not severe enough that they would have had treatment prior to this, but just have had trouble in their lives with relationships and, you know, business relationships, personal relationships, and being able to have, I think there's probably part relief because now you have an explanation and a way move forward, but also to think about all the wasted time that you've had, not having it diagnosed, not having treatment, not, you know, addressing these, thinking of what could have been. So I imagine it's a double-edged sword, and he played all of that to perfection.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I have tools now, I can do something. It's like, oh my God, look at how much better my life could have been, you know?
Yeah, so making me like Ray Romano. Kudos to you, Parenthood.
Good on you. Good and show. Then another new show, The Flash on CW.
Right.
The Flash himself, his big crush, is a black woman who's the daughter of Jesse Williams on the show. Fantastic. She's super cute, and they're so cute.
That's Jesse Williams' real daughter?
No, Jesse. Oh, not Jesse Williams. Jesse Martin. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
Jesse Martin.
Okay, that makes a little bit more sense. I didn't know Jesse Williams had kids, much less old enough.
And then that's the Flash's crush. But then her actual boyfriend on the show, because there's a little bit of a love triangle, also a white guy.
Just love it.
Love it.
And then Grey's Anatomy.
There's
multiple. Wasn't there more than one interracial relationship on Grey's Anatomy?
I don't know.
They've had more than one.
But yes, but I don't know about black woman, white man. Actually, I don't know why that's on this list because I can't think of one.
Yeah, totally. The Jesse Williams character, or wasn't the one girl the virgin? Didn't she?
Yeah, but that's not the way we're talking about.
No, you're right.
So that shouldn't be on the list.
That shouldn't be on the list.
How to Get Away with Murder? Obviously, Viola Davis is the main character. Is married to a white man.
And what's Merlin? I've never even heard of this.
It's on Sci-Fi, and it's weird because it's set in like Robin Hood times, but yet there she is, black woman with a white man.
Okay.
Community, obviously. Do they have Community? No.
Who's on Community?
No, it? Not Community. Community's the other way because Britta and Troy got together. But that's a black man and a white woman.
You're right.
Mistresses definitely has the black girl on that show. I don't know her name, but she has she's had several.
Oh, we left off Ray Donovan.
Oh, right. Ray Donovan.
Ray Donovan. I don't know if they're still together. But
Shirley Ralph. Oh, yep.
He fucking stands hard for black women on that show.
He does stand hard for black women. He doesn't play. Shameless.
I always say Ray Donovan like I'm Boston. Ray Donovan. Ray Donovan.
You're a pissa. Isn't that what she always says?
So, I don't know.
Anyways, Shameless, that's also on Showtime. They definitely have the two that own the bar. It's a black woman and a white male.
Don't watch it.
Good show, actually. You should watch it.
Okay.
People should watch it. Archer. Archer.
It's cartoon, but.
Lana and Archer.
Love it.
And then The Good Wife. The Good Wife had The Good Wife had.
The son.
Anika Noni Rose. She had a white husband. And then the son, his girlfriend was black. So black and Muslim, I might add.
Spoiler alert, they're going through some troubles. Said black girlfriend and son. I don't want to ruin The Good Wife. Another awesome show.
Great show. So, yeah.
I had interaction with the writers on Good Wife because I tweeted them and said, did you guys get Pussy Riot on TV?
They did.
They did.
Sure did.
And we didn't even talk. We're done talking about TV shows. But we were watching, what was it? Was it American Horror Show where they said shit,
four times.
And then she said about the hermaphrodite, Angela Davis, said something about having a pussy. So they're saying shit and pussy on TV now.
Apparently, after 10 p.m., all bets are off.
I knew shit, but pussy surprised me.
Yeah, that's it. Surprising. Pussy? I remember when that TV show, it was a miniseries, Lace, came out. I don't know if you remember this. It was like a long time ago. And the big climactic thing was that it was these four girls who had gone to boarding school together. One of them had a baby and they never told anybody who the mother was and they gave the baby up. And the baby becomes this big, like, pseudo porn star.
She catches
up with them and she finishes the big cliffhanger of the first or second night was like, which one of you bitches is my mother? And it was like, oh my God, she said bitch on TV.
Yeah,
and now it's like shit.
Go even further when I want to say, who was it that did, gosh darn it, It's a Wonderful Life? Who's that actor?
Jimmy Stewart.
He did a movie, and I forget which movie it was, but he said goddamn in the pivotal sort of like, get your goddamn hands.
That's movie, though.
No, it was TV. It was on TV. It was a big, or rather, when they were playing it on TV, it was a big to-do.
Because
he said goddamn.
And it's not Charlton Heston? You goddamn dirty ape.
No. It was TV, and it was Jimmy Stewart, and it was like, you know, he was doing all that like stuff that was on CBS or this or that, and it was like one of those TV movies sponsored by Shell Oil or some shit, and it was a big one, and he said goddamn for the first time, and it was an FCC sort of uproar.
Interesting.
And now we're saying shit and pussy.
That's interesting.
It makes me think of, was it South Park movie? Fuck.
Yeah. But South Park was the first one. They said shit like a billion times.
Right, like 100 times.
They had a counter on the bottom of the screen, I remember.
I remember as well.
So they've started on a lot of TV shows just bleeping when they want to curse instead of showing it.
They do that on the one we just mentioned that we liked, Marry Me.
Yeah, and they do that on Modern Family quite a bit as well.
And they used to do it on the one with Christina Applegate that they ruined and then took off the air.
Mm-hmm.
With Will Arnett. I can't remember the name of it.
Oh,
and Maya Rudolph.
Up All Night.
Yeah, but then they like flipped it and made it a completely different show. It was like,
what terrible.
The?
And then they all quit.
And then they got canceled.
Oh, okay.
Way to go.
Is
that all the shows? I think that's all the shows we had.
I think that was all the shows that we had talking about that stuff. And then we'll finish up with a little bit of podcast standing, and we're actually going back to our original podcast stand for our favorite podcast.
Rodimus and Karen.
The Black Guy Who Tips, which is awesome. For real, if you guys aren't listening to the show, you're so missing out.
Totally.
And I would highly suggest that you go premium because they put out an incredible amount of content each week in addition to their regular The Black Guy Who Tips podcast.
The episode we're going to stand for is premium, right?
Yeah, it's a premium show. It comes on Fridays. They go live Friday afternoons with Rod, sometimes Karen, but definitely my boy Jay Trill.
Justin. Worst fucking advice ever, Justin.
And you can follow him at Rhyme Over Reason on Twitter. You can follow Rod.
I wouldn't suggest it unless you wanted to hit on your wife.
He doesn't really hit on me, but he's funny.
It's just a little bit something there.
Well, there's nothing there. But anyways.
Okay. I got my eye on you, Rhyme Over Reason.
But anyways, Balls Deep Sports, they talk about sports and they talk about all sorts of stuff having to do with sports. And actually, they talk about everything anyways, but they do like during the football season, they talk about football picks and they talk about fantasy football, and then they talk about whatever's in the news having to do with sports as well. So last week, they had a whole bit about this wrestler.
And by bit, it was just Rod and fucking Justin reading these tweets and laughing their ass off and cracking it up.
About what's his name?
Jason
Mayhem,
Mayhem Miller.
Right.
And you might remember him. He was the guy that did the Bully Beatdown show on MTV.
Oh, right, on MTV. Right.
So he was the MMA guy that was the, you know, like teaching you how to fight and do the stuff before you met with the bully. That was him. But he had an arrest warrant and they went to serve it. And he did like a lot of white guys. He barricaded himself in the house with guns. And then in a modern twist, put his phone number out on Twitter, changed his bio to his phone number, and like live tweeted his
His way through this SWAT occupation of his front yard and taking him down.
I've seen Twitter implosions, but this was good.
As Rod said, only a white dude could literally tweet his way through the police trying to serve him a warrant and arrest him.
Well, I'll just implore folks to listen to Balls Deep and Rod, because they're fucking hilarious. But
you had the one tweet you wanted to read.
Part of their cracking on Mayhem Miller was that he was tweeting the police and all this shit going on. And at some point it took like an odd kind of turn where he started comparing himself to like black men and sort of like making these tweets like, I feel your pain. So he said, I did nothing wrong. This is the state of American justice. I feel you black men. They fear. So they threaten to take our lives. Aberrant.
And Rod said, but don't bring us into this. We don't want to get involved in this.
It almost reads like all your bases belong to us. Like it's just
crazy.
Like, not only is he tweeting through his own fucking SWAT invasion, he's doing it in ridiculous fashion.
Yeah,
but only a white guy.
Yeah, so Balls Deep.
You know what that is?
What?
Douchey, man. What a douche. What a douche thinking he could fucking live tweet through a fucking SWAT invasion.
Crazy.
Douchebag. Jason douchebag. Oh, I shouldn't say. He's probably got. He could kick my ass.
Oh,
we love you, Jason. You're awesome.
Hope you get out soon, Mayhem.
Be strong.
Be strong. Stay strong in there. Make some friends. Okay. So again, Black Guy Who Tips, Balls Deep Sports, premium content. Become a premium member of
the
Black Guy Who Tips. They get like 13 dings. I love the Black Guy.
Don't leave it alone.
They're awesome.
They're worthy of
So again, you can find us online on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, Interracial John.
J-A-W-N.
J-A-W-N or Interracial John, J-A-W-N.com, or on Stitcher Radio, just search Interracial John, or even just the word interracial, we come up there as well.
Really?
Yes.
Now that might be a goal to like how long does it take us to appear for the word interracial in Google search results?
It'll take a while. I think there's a lot of stuff on Interracial.
Yeah.
Not on Stitcher Radio. There's not that many.
Oh, on Stitcher where we come up?
Yeah, it's like
Tonilla
and then us.
Okay.
It's funny. There's some other ones, but we come up pretty up there.
I get a ding for Tonilla.
All right. All right, so that's it. Episode 7 in the can.
We did it.
High five.